Hello and welcome back to The Talk with Chef Michael. I'm your host, Mike Silverstein. Guys, you already know, this podcast is about diving in a little bit deeper into the food, beverage, and diet industry. We talk keto, we talk things not keto, you know, but I wanted to get a little bit deeper than sometimes I do on Instagram. Have a little bit more time to get a little bit deeper into this stuff and bring in a guest each episode that has some new and insightful information to share. Today's guest is an awesome guy, keto influencer and author. But before we dive into that, I just want to give you a little bit of information. If you want to learn more about this episode, go to chefmichael.com/podcast. And that's chef-michael.com/podcast. You can also keep the lights on and the cameras rolling by supporting the podcast. Go to patreon.com/chefmichael and join my membership, where basically you get bonus content as well as some freebies. And those bonus content includes some extra episodes, like after each episode, after my interview with our guest, I talk about what happened that episode and kind of give my own thoughts and insights into these bonus, you know, as bonus episodes. So join me there on Patreon at patreon.com/chefmichael. Finally, thank you so much to our sponsor, Redmond Salt, for supporting the podcast. Guys, if you watch my Instagram, you already know I'm always cooking with Redmond Salt. It sits next to my stove all the time. Not only do I think it tastes great, which is good for cooking, but it has some great health benefits because it is a natural sea salt mined here in the USA, actually in Utah. It's an ancient dried up seabed, and that salt is mined pretty much raw out of the ground. It is so good. It has over 65 trace minerals. So when you talk about the importance of electrolytes with the keto diet, you can get a ton of that just by using real salt in your cooking. You can find Redmond Salt at most grocery stores now around the country, but if you can't, go to redmond.life, and that's redmond.life, not redmond.com. They have a ton of products you can buy online. Use the discount code CHEFMICHAEL at checkout for 15% off. They also have some other cool stuff. I use their toothpaste and other things. So check them out, redmond.life. Thanks again. Now, welcome to our guest, Eirik Wiggins, another Austinite. I'm happy to have him here. And since he moved to Austin, we've actually become friends, which is really cool. But he's a lot of fun with what he does on Instagram. He also has an awesome book that you can grab on Amazon. So welcome, Eirik. I have the pleasure of getting to hang out with you in real life because you are a fellow Austinite. We actually moved here like a couple months apart, I think, right? Just coincidental.
Yeah.
But I moved. Welcome and thanks for being here. And of course, if you want to quickly just say, like, I don't know who you are. I gave you a little introduction before you came on screen, but if you want to say who you are, that would be awesome.
Sure. So my name is Eirik Wiggins, and I am, I guess you would say, a keto influencer. I started doing keto in 2016, and it really changed my life. I was always overweight. Nothing seemed to work. And just simply by eating less carbs, I like just lost 80 pounds in the span of 2 years. And I was like, oh my God, this is so amazing. I have to. Like I was in that phase where you're telling everybody you know about how amazing keto is, to the point of being annoying, like, hey, that sugar you're eating is killing you. Like I became that guy for a while, and eventually I like started an Instagram page for keto so I could channel all of that energy of like being preachy without preaching to people who like have no interest in doing keto. And that started in 2018, and I just started posting recipes, just like living a keto lifestyle, like in front of Instagram, and it just like skyrocketed, I guess, because
it blew up a little bit. You've had some real viral moments. You've done awesome.
Yeah, just I think because of my super simple approach of like being lazy, loving convenience, like eating, I guess what people call dirty keto. It's like, I guess it's a very appealing way of doing keto because I come from a fast food for dinner background. So whenever I did keto, it was like, I've never like eaten like super high quality foods. So just the fact that I was cutting out the carbs was like a miracle to me that this was working. And over time I've increased the quality of my food, but I'm still very much like in my roots of love being convenient, like eating tons of cheese all the time, you know. And yeah, that's where I'm at today.
Yeah, we have the cheese thing in common, among many
Yes.
other things. I want to give you a little credit. I know you called yourself an influencer, which I don't disagree with, but I also think you're a lot more than that. You're really, as I see it, like a content creator and author. So I want to give you a little shout out there. You have an
Thank
awesome
you.
cookbook. You have an awesome cookbook out called Breaking Up with Carbs, which is really cool. It has, I think, 100 recipes or something, but it's also a lot more than that. It has some really cool like self-help, and we'll dive into that because there's a few things in the book that I want to talk about when we get there. But I want to address something you just said, which is this idea of like lazy or dirty keto, right? And like there's a lot of opinions around this, I guess I could say, right? Like this is a pretty controversial topic, and this idea of like clean versus dirty and everybody fitting into a particular box. So obviously you described yourself just now as sort of a lazy or a dirty ketoer, but that being said, it's worked really well for you. So talk about that for a second.
So it's just like you hear all the time, you have to eat grass-fed beef, you can't have too much cheese, stay away from low-carb tortillas. And all of that is great if you're trying to seriously optimize your health, or maybe you're in that like bottom 5% of like metabolism and you just have a really hard time losing weight. But for the average person who's overweight and addicted to fast food, it's like this style of keto is the only realistic way that they're ever going to make a change. So for me, it was like I literally would eat McDonald's for dinner. And whenever I did keto, I was able to still eat McDonald's for dinner, which I'm not saying is like optimal, but it's just that freedom of simply restricting carbs and your body having such a different response to the food you're eating, even without the increase in quality, is so crazy to me because, yes, you can get your health to like 80% with dirty, lazy keto. If you want to get to that 100%, you're going to have to increase the quality of your food. But for me, it was just like, yeah, I love eating processed foods. It's Quest cookies every night for me, whatever it may be. I'm just very much a fast, convenient type eater. So this is why dirty, lazy keto works great for me. And yeah, I just think that to expect a person who's drinking a large Coke with their Big Mac and fries to go straight into beef liver and like a spinach salad for dinner is just like it's very overwhelming and it scares them away. So I think the answer is always somewhere in the middle, but I like just will die repping dirty keto if I have to because I think it's how you get that subgroup of people who just live on fast food, you know?
It's actually pretty fascinating to me, because it a lot of like, I'll be honest, a lot of nutritionalists or people really like who focus on the science of keto would disagree with you, in fact. However, I think you're saying something really, really important, and I don't want to gloss over it. Getting people to succeed and make positive changes in their life is really the most important part of this all, right? So like if what you're saying is that your approach helps people get healthier than they were the day before, like that's enormous. Like you said, if somebody's eating and addicted to McDonald's, if they can still kind of do that but without the carbs, I mean that's an amazing approach. And honestly, like I think it's an important discussion to have. So I'm glad I actually didn't intend on going there with this discussion, because I don't really generally love identifying keto like with these labels. I think it can sometimes be kind of like a trap, and I think it's part of the overwhelm that you're talking about in general. Because like somebody who's new or never started keto, if you start like Googling how to keto, it's like you can find 100 articles or 100 websites or 100 bloggers that will all swear by completely different things. And so I think when we get into like too many labels, it can actually add to the overwhelming sense for a lot of people. But I think even as we're talking, you're really shining a light on some really important topics, which is, yeah, the nutritional piece is obviously the foundation of all of it. But what you're hitting on is sort of the mental piece. You know, the addiction piece around food, I think is something that we don't talk about enough. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that that's why you called your book Breaking Up with Carbs, right?
Yeah.
It's I'm connecting the dots in that regard, because like, there's gotta be a lot to this, like transitioning, like if you're going to be keto for the rest of your life, you know, really like understanding cutting out certain vegetable oils and certain inflammatory foods is good health decisions, keto or not. But kicking those carbs is like number one. It has to be, right? Like that's the most important foundation. I know when I started keto too, I did the same thing. Like I only really do fast food takeout, like if I'm on kind of on a road trip or have a particularly busy day. I'm also like, I have a little bit of an unfair advantage in that I'm always cooking anyway, and I love cooking. Yeah. So I understand it's an unfair advantage, and especially for people like if you have a lot of, you know, if you have kids or a crazy work schedule, it's harder and harder to cook homemade food all the time. So I love that you create a safe space online, you know, for people who are really looking for quick, easy, just like tasty food that's keto, and putting that as the priority so that people stay keto. It's like a sustainable approach, I guess.
Yeah. And I like how you mentioned the inflammatory oils like canola and soybean oil, because I always tell my audience, like I go live and they watch me eat and say we're making chicken wings in the air fryer. They'll be like, hey, why aren't you dipping that in like regular ranch? Because the primal ranch just looks like all like weird. And they're like, why aren't you using regular ranch? And it's like, I have gotten to a point in my keto journey where I can take these steps and level up a little bit for my health by avoiding things like soybean and canola oil. But I always tell them, if you're on the brink of eating carbs this weekend, by all means, keep eating your Hidden Valley Ranch, because that's what I did my entire first 2 years of keto. So yeah. And one thing I want to add is, next time we hang out, you have to show me a good, like, non-inflammatory ranch recipe. I think we talked about this a little on Clubhouse, but
I got you. I got you. Ranch is actually like surprisingly easy, but yeah, we'll do that. We could even like make a little video doing ranch and blue cheese or something. It's like, they're both so easy.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, I think you, I want to reiterate another thing you said earlier, which was that there's a difference in keto. Like we see keto a lot as this like weight loss thing, but keto is really much bigger than weight loss. Weight loss is a result. It's one thing. And it's like a motivator why people show up to keto. But typically people stay in keto because your whole body feels better and like your whole kind of metabolism works better. So when we get into this, like if your decision-making is purely to lose weight, you may take a different approach, like you said, than focusing on health as the primary metric. And when you get into the health side of this, there's no doubt that the cleaner you can eat, the better your health is going to be. However, for a lot of people, the idea of being healthy without having the conversation about weight, like it's like one has to start there, right? I know I did. And that's why I really relate to what you're saying. Cause, when I started keto, I didn't even like, and I don't recommend that anybody starts keto cold turkey. I think it actually, I never had the keto flu ever in my life because I sort of slowly transitioned off of carbs. I sort of slowly broke up with carbs in my life. And then over time really started refining and cleaning that up. Like I remember, I think I did 2 weeks where I just did no desserts. I was still eating pasta and rice, but I just did like 2 weeks of absolutely no desserts so that I could work on that addiction first. That like, that trigger of like, you know, after dinner, we all kind of have this saying in our head of like, I just need something sweet. I need a little something sweet. Like that moment I had to like work on that before I could work on anything else. And so Then after those 2 weeks, then I was like, all right, I'm done with rice and bread, but I'm still going to have like, you know, potatoes or whatever. You know, I don't remember exactly the process, but I think it took me about 6 or 8 weeks of slowly transitioning off of keto. And then from there, it's been another like 3 years of continuing to refine what keto is for me. And it ebbs and flows. I've had carnivorous months. I've had extremely like vegetable forward months. I've experimented with fasting. So there's a little bit of like kind of self-experimentation within that too. But you're right. Like you now, years later, can start to like play with cleaning it up a little bit and making better decisions, but that's only because now you're not so focused on the weight loss part. And what I found in the weight loss phase was I had to focus very heavily on like tracking and being pretty precise about not hitting certain calorie restriction, like kind of calorie maximums that I set for the day, not hitting carb restrictions. Then after I got through my weight loss phase as like keto as a lifestyle, it's definitely a lot more relaxed in regards to the tracking. So now I can focus more on quality. And I don't know if you kind of had like a similar journey in that sense.
Yeah. So I agree 100% with that. And there's like literally a section in my book called Baby Steps. And I literally tell my audience, take baby steps, because people constantly tell me, I slipped up this weekend. I feel so bad. I keep slipping up every weekend. What's wrong with me? Why can't I make this stick? And it's like, maybe you're just taking too big of a leap. It's like, you have to do this one step at a time. If you're going from 400 carbs a day to 300, instead of feeling guilty that you're not in ketosis, what if you celebrated the fact that you're making progress? Because that's how anything gets done in life, is one step at a time. And you just have to have the self-awareness of, this is clearly not working for me. How can I take three steps back to take one step forward, and just keep repeating this process until I'm actually staying under 20 carbs a day? And I think with calorie tracking, that's something that I still have never been able to do, but I see it all the time. A lot of people do keto. They're like, I'm doing exactly what you're doing, but I'm not losing weight. And I would argue you can tweak your lifestyle to reduce your appetite to where you may not have to track calories. People do it all the time. But how many people are going to make the space to get 8 hours of sleep, to meditate 20 minutes a day, to like remove themselves from like stressful situations? Like, there are so many lifestyle factors that influence your appetite that you can tweak your lifestyle to where you don't have to resort to calorie counting. But at the end of the day, that is so much work, and it may only work for 60% of people. There's still that huge group who there's nothing they can do other than track calories, because it's such a psychologically ingrained habit to just have large meals, large portions, that there's, it's just, it has to, that's the only thing that works, you know, for some people.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to like kind of catch and disclaim that when I said that I count calories to get through my big weight loss, I'm not necessarily suggesting that. It's all I knew at the time. And I think a lot of beginners in keto, or beginners in any sort of weight loss realm, it seems like it's sort of what we've been taught, that this idea that weight loss is purely a calories in, calories out, or weight gain as well, is just caused by too many calories. But I do also agree with what you just said, that like for me, as somebody who loves eating and really has a problem with binge eating, especially if it's just something I'm like, A, either emotionally attached to, or B, it's just really delicious and I just don't care how full I am. I just want to keep eating it. I do have to be careful with calories, because I'm really, even years into keto, I'm really good about kind of intuitively understanding how to make food that fits my macros, getting the right amount of fat versus protein versus carbs. However, I can still eat too many of that. Pretty easily, especially in a high fat diet. Fat is caloric. And I don't believe that weight loss is purely a calories in, calories out. Most nutritionists will disagree as well. However, there is still like too many calories over time, obviously you will gain weight. But it's also a trap, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I wish I had a better understanding of this when I started keto. When you do calorie deficiencies and start pushing yourself into extremely low calorie numbers, you will also lose weight. But typically, that's how you lose weight quickly and then gain it back very quickly, because you're kind of damaging your metabolism at that point.
Yeah.
Your body's going to like get used to 1500 or even 1000. There's women who push themselves down to like 1000 calories a day. And then your metabolism, like our bodies are amazingly flexible and adaptable. And so like your metabolism is going to slow down so much that it's going to feel comfortable at 1200 or 1000 calories. And then as soon as you stop that aggressive dieting, you're going to gain all the weight back and sometimes more. We've seen that on like Biggest Loser TV shows. Most of those people end up gaining more weight than they had lost to begin with and end up heavier than they started. So I think calories as the goal is risky business. It did work for me, but I've also had to be really careful after losing the weight to be very mindful of how not to yo-yo and gain it all back.
Yeah, that's 100. I 100% agree. There's always those people who say, I'm only losing 3 pounds per week. What am I doing wrong? And I'm like, 3 pounds per week? That's insane. That's a lot.
That might be too much.
So what I always
mathematically, that'd be 150 pounds in a year, just as reference.
And I think a lot of people are like severely overweight when they're losing that much weight. So for somebody who has 20 pounds to lose, they may lose 0.5 pound per week if they're lucky. And it's like, I always tell them, consider that a blessing, because if you are really restricting yourself, it's only going to hurt you in the long term. And a lot of people are just like, our whole culture is based on quick results. And it's like, if you can just slow down and take that turtle mindset of like, let's realize that slow progress is the only sustainable way to realistically keep the weight off, you know?
Yes, preach. I actually had somebody write me and say, they use the words, I'm frustrated because I've only lost 3 pounds the last 2 weeks since going keto. And I immediately wrote them back and was like, whoa. We only lost 3 pounds. That's not an only thing. Like, that's really good. I think it's hard because, you know, we do want instant results, and understanding that weight loss is a slow race is really important, and it's not a linear race. We're like, it's going to kind of like jump around on its way down, I think, is definitely really important. And like, we can have a whole discussion on mindset and sort of the thought process behind weight loss, because I think that's all part of this, and how stress plays into this is a whole other part of the discussion. But before we get into like away from the sort of nutritional piece, I want to say that I really like a lot of what you're saying, because I always try to tell people, like, I would rather you be 70% keto for the rest of your life and like have off days here and there, you know, eat a little bit of carbs and be kind of like 70% keto, then 100% keto, like all in, and then crash a month in because it's not sustainable. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I think people feel like, and truthfully, it's not their fault, because I think there's a lot of judgment in the keto space. Like, it feels like if you're not like a total keto head, you don't fit sometimes. And I think one of the reasons people really connect with you is that you're very approachable and you're very non-judgmental and you're very sort of chill about keto. Which it doesn't surprise me why people are able to connect with you. Not to mention, you're also like really entertaining and make great content. But I think that it's such an important conversation to have. Like, I don't know if I've talked about this before, but like, we hear all the time, like on Instagram, about like meatless Mondays, like one day a week doing meatless for whatever reason people want to do it. Like, why would it be that crazy to like, for everybody to just do like a keto Tuesday? Like, why would it be so crazy? You don't have to be like an insane keto head to find results from keto. Like, I don't think anybody, I know keto is very controversial in many ways, but I don't think anybody in the Western part of the world, or really anywhere, can deny that we eat too much sugar and too much crap and too much wheat. I don't think anybody can deny that. So if you cut out one day of sugar, if everybody cut out one day of sugar a week, one out of seven, what is that? Like 18% or something less sugar in your week. Can you imagine the difference though? Like, I don't know. It just seems crazy that there's so much judgment sometimes around, like, you have to be 100% perfectly squeaky clean keto all the time, or don't at all, which I think a lot of people come into the keto mind space, keto space with that mindset. And you mentioned that a few minutes ago, that like, it's so important that people kind of find a keto that's actually doable for them, whatever that means for them, whether it's like their relationship with food, their financial ability to sustain keto, their emotional ability to sustain keto. I think it's super important to build like a chill, happy, easy lifestyle around it. So like, if that's dirty keto for you, then fucking great.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I had weekly cheat days my entire first year of keto. So as somebody who, since Easter 2019, I have not had a full out cheat day. I have had cheat meals here and there, probably seven, but I haven't had a full on cheat day, which could maybe be considered a binge. I would go to like, I had a route where I would go to like four different fast food restaurants.
Oh, I've been there.
And I would go to Walmart, get the tub of ice cream, and I would get the like the Hot Pockets, like whatever. I would literally probably take in like 600 or 700 carbs on that one day. And a lot of people are like, that's so terrible. Why would you do that? But it's like, I didn't really know what I was doing, but it was also just looking forward to Friday, being able to go as hard as I wanted. It eased my mind the rest of the week. And I still saw massive results, where I think that's an unhealthy relationship for a lot of people to have with food, especially if your health is not, like, maybe I'm genetically better off handling large caloric days like that. For some people, that could be really damaging and it could actually prevent any of their weight loss. But it's like, sometimes you just have to realize that 6 days of keto is 1,000 times better than 0 days of keto. Right. Like, as you
exactly.
were saying.
Exactly. Yes. And you know, what's really funny about what you're saying is like, in regards to your cheat days, is like that has traditionally been really discouraged. However, there's a funny new movement of this idea of reverse dieting, where basically, because of what I was just saying a minute ago in a different context, your body has a lot of adaptability. And so our metabolism gets very comfortable with whatever it is that we're eating. So after a while, and it's not necessarily good right away because of the mental piece, which again is a really big topic, our relationship with food, that has to be handled before we worry about macros. But a lot of people hit stalls because our body is getting used to the lack of carbs too. And so there's like 1 day or even 2 day carb cycling or reverse dieting suggestions that like certain people in the nutrition field in the keto space are starting to recommend, where basically they do exactly what you did, not to the binge point, not to the point where you're doing 600 grams of carbs from crap. The discussion is more around like, should you have a little bit of sweet potato or an apple and a banana once a week on Saturdays? And because what it's basically doing is giving your metabolism like a little bit of a trick. It's like resetting it every week. So rather than your body getting like super comfortable in a diet mode, it kind of like reverse diets for a week and then it restarts again. You could do that with calories as well. If you keep dropping your calories, then once a week, if you're down to 1500 calories and once a week you eat 2000 calories. So it kind of keeps your metabolism guessing to a certain extent and keeps you at that level. So I'm just learning about this. I've never experimented with it myself. I don't know if you've heard of it or know much about reverse dieting or carb cycling and why. Women carb cycle, and we discussed this in another episode, women carb cycle for as a part of their menstrual cycles because of the way that carbs affect hormones. But there's also some value metabolically as well, studies are starting to show. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays into the kind of keto discussion over the next few years. But maybe your weight loss worked for you to a certain extent because you kept your metabolic flexibility through your weight loss journey.
That's really interesting. I read a book that mentioned kind of how you were saying when you go into like this super diet mode, your body gets used to that many calories. And I think what the book was saying was when people restrict so much, your body actually just gets good at producing less energy. So rather than your body being the adaptable machine that it is, your body is like, oh, let's just go on low energy mode so that we can survive this 1100 calorie diet. And I'm wondering if it's similar on keto. Maybe a carb cycling experiment would be great for me. I just would have to be careful. Like, let's do sweet potato fries with like avocado oil, rather than like, let's go eat six boxes of Oreos.
Correct. Yeah. And that has to be made clear. Reverse dieting or carb cycling is not like permission to go insane on the weekend, because as you mentioned earlier, like that will mess up, a weight loss journey. Yeah. More importantly, that's just bad for our relationship and our kind of mindset around food, because you don't want to lose that sense of control. That sense of like, I'm in charge of my cravings and like, I'm in charge of myself and I feel empowered. Cause like for me, and probably for a lot of other people in this space, like going through a weight loss journey and going through keto, there's a lot of empowerment around learning to control and find a healthy relationship with food that I had never had at any other point in my life until I started keto. So yeah, it's interesting. We can dive into this further together as well. Because I have always felt like I could never get past this weight that I'm at now. I'm back to kind of like my low point. And I think it's called a set point. There's like a set point for most of us where our bodies kind of are like, that's where we're not going to make this easy on you anymore. Yeah. And I'm kind of at my set point. Like, first of all, I don't think I'll ever be a skinny person. Nor do I necessarily want to be. However, no matter what I can do, like, it doesn't seem like I can get past this weight. And I may experiment a little bit with this idea of like kind of reverse dieting and once a week, like introducing healthy carbs. That's the important key here. Yeah. Healthy carbs, or maybe like a little bit of a caloric increase, so that when I restart again on Monday, my body's like, oh, yay. Because it's true what you were saying. When we diet, our body understands that we're in a restricted place with our intake, with our food, and it puts us kind of into a survival mode. And in fact, it can be really counterintuitive, because in fact, if your body thinks that you're under stress, think about it from an evolutionary perspective as animals. Like, as hunter-gatherers, there wasn't food on the table every day or three times a day, even like we're taught. They would like have to go out and hunt and then basically binge on that animal, because there was no way to store that meat. And then you could go 3-4 days sometimes without eating. So as animals, our body's amazingly capable of handling us when we have food and when we don't. And so if we're kind of like restricting too much, our metabolism is just going to slow down. It's just going to wind down and go to a crawl. And like, that's where plateaus happen. And that's where you have to keep adjusting those macros and turning it down or whatever it may be. So yeah, it's something super, I don't think it's new, the idea of reverse dieting, but I think it's gaining momentum and I'm hearing it more. I was just listening to something about it this morning. So I'm pretty curious to dive into that a little.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. And it's just so fascinating how you were mentioning, as humans, like, we evolved in a totally different environment than we exist in today.
That's right.
It's like our bodies were not designed for this. Like, no. Your brain literally does not produce the amount of happy chemicals it should when you keep yourself super sedentary, when you're eating tons of sugar. And it's like actual happiness on the level that a human should experience it is not possible with this current lifestyle we're living because of how our brains evolved our reward systems. And it's like whenever you hack your dopamine system by eating a ton of sugar, you feel shame, you feel guilt. So you're less likely to experience like the like serotonin or whatever, where you feel courageous and bold. So it's like whenever we can step back and take that slow drip of feeling good about ourselves rather than that quick high of eating sugar, it's like that is how humans were supposed to exist in nature. We just live in a totally wonky environment today. So it's like I love you touching on that.
And so let's expand on this a little bit. I think we can all agree that especially sugar is really addicting. And our body reacts to sugar the same way that it does to many drugs, in fact, in terms of like the release of certain hormones and stuff. So I know in your book you touch on this a little bit. I'd love for you to expand on it. Not only kind of how and why sugar is so addicting, but if you have any practical tips for how to work on our addiction to food. I think in your book you have like a 30-day plan, if I'm not mistaken, or something for how, kind of a practical approach. So why don't you chime in a little bit on that?
Yeah, so the book has like a 60-day no cheat challenge, which
60 day. Okay, yeah.
we're actually on like day 20. We started in February. We're on day 24 now. So yeah, the thing is like it's extremely difficult for the average person to stick to keto. Nearly impossible. Like just look at the world, how many people are actually sticking to their habits? It's like, I don't know what the percentage is, but if you look at everybody who starts a New Year's resolution, basically everybody gives up on them. So we're asking ourselves to do a nearly impossible task when we try to start something like keto. So you need tools to overcome this addiction because it's the same thing as a drug addiction. Like there are just studies of when, I don't know, like I may be butchering this, but like it's like there was like a study where mice chose sugar over cocaine, like when they were given the option to pick between
I
the
think I've
two.
heard that as well,
And
yeah.
it's just sugar is ridiculously addicting. And to break that addiction is just like beyond, just it's not in the realm of possibilities for the average person. So we have to take a step back and be like, okay, well, what are the driving factors for actually succeeding with this? And it usually comes down to it's an emotional thing. If we can find emotional fulfillment outside of food, we're much more likely to make the healthy choices. Because for me at least, eating McDonald's fries and let's say the Oreo McFlurry is like the greatest high I've ever experienced, you know? Like there's nothing like it. And to take that away from us is like, it's just so impossibly difficult that you have to have structures in place to navigate this new life without that massive source of happiness. So we start with like meditation. We start with journaling. Journaling is a huge one. A lot of times when we're faced with carbs, it's like the primal part of our brain that is wired to find honey in the wilderness and be like, okay, we probably won't find this for another 6 weeks. Let's really make the most of this, or another 6 days. So we have this primal part of our brain that literally hijacks our behavior and puts us in a state of needing, like we need. So a way to step out of that is journaling. You stop and you simply write down the pros and cons of eating these McDonald's fries and this McFlurry. And simply by stopping to write down the pros and cons, you're literally sending blood flow from the impulsive part of your brain to the thinking part of your brain. So when you do a task, your brain switches energy to different parts of your brain. Like if somebody sits there and does a math problem, they're activating different parts of their brain than somebody who is watching reality TV. So simply by directing yourself to your notepad and on your phone and writing down the pros and cons, you are literally transforming you as a human in that moment. And that's huge because it's all just brain chemistry when it comes to our decisions. Like there's no such thing as total self-control, but if you can put yourself in a position to make better decisions, there's nothing like it, because that is how you succeed, is to change that brain chemistry to transform into a more disciplined, more controlled version of yourself.
Well, it's shocking hearing this, because it's so true. I think for a lot of people though, who come into weight loss, who put those like January New Year's resolutions, it's things as simple as like, I want to lose weight because I don't feel sexy or I don't like my weight. But I think often part of the journaling aspect, I'm guessing, part of what makes the pros and cons list so valuable is that you're starting to understand like your why, your deeper reasoning behind these things. And you start to weigh it and say like, is this really more important to me? And it becomes kind of like a little bit bigger, a little bit more real, I guess, if you're writing it down. And that's something that I have not done before. And I'm really intrigued.
There's like an emotional vortex that happens when we start thinking about carbs. It's like we lose the ability to consider our why in that moment. And it's literally because your brain is just so lit up with anticipation for the carbs that you lose yourself. And it's like the journaling, the meditation, taking deep breaths is a great way to pull yourself out of that whirlwind of emotions and remind yourself who you are, why you're doing this, what you really want out of life. Because unless you can tell me you want, say somebody is pre-diabetic, unless they can tell me they want to develop diabetes, they cannot tell me they want those McDonald's fries. Because is that, sure, you may want them for a few seconds, but is that your deeper want? It's actually not. So we tell ourselves we want carbs, but when we just stop and think for a second, we're like, wait, I actually don't want these. I just want the pleasure that they bring me.
Right. And I think it's not anyone's fault for having those thoughts, because beyond just sort of like what you said, beyond sort of like our training as primal beings, as a culture, we're trained in this, right? So from the minute we're children, most parents unknowingly or unintentionally set up reward systems for us around food. Our culture kind of does that as well. Holidays, celebratory events, there's always the best food. So our mind starts to get programmed. You are a kid playing t-ball as an 8-year-old and you win the game, your coach brings you out for pizza. If you lose the game and you're sad, the coach brings you out for pizza. So we're forming connections in our brain between emotional highs and lows, both of which, and food. Like we talk a lot about like comfort food as like, you know, I'm sad, I want to eat. I'm depressed, I want to eat. It's very true. We also do it for happy emotions as well, because of our training. That's like how it is. You know, we all grew up in those households where like for every holiday, it's a huge meal where you like have the best food and you eat way too much and you're like almost rewarded for it in a sense. Like it's almost like a source of pride at Thanksgiving is like how full you can get, you know?
Yeah.
And so a lot of these childhood programmings are brought with us into adulthood. I know it is for me. You know, I know like, you were good today. You can have ice cream tonight or whatever. Or no, you're being bad. You're not going to have dessert with dinner. Those things build into our programming and follow us into adulthood. I still think of those foods like as treats more mentally even than like the taste of it. And so I think understanding that and gaining some control over our emotionality behind food is so, so important. And it's like a work in progress for me even still. I'm not like above it or enlightened magically just because I went keto. And that's, I think, something that people see like, yeah, you can lose weight on keto, but it really doesn't matter what macros you eat. It doesn't matter if you're clean or dirty, keto. Like, if you don't work on this emotional piece, and so the fact that you're, even though you make delicious food and share that food with people, the fact that you're also saying, like, here are some practical tools to deal with the emotional piece is beautiful. Like, you, I think you have a fairly spiritual approach at times to keto, not necessarily religious, but sort of spiritual. Something that I think is really unique that you do these daily, Instagram lives, and
yeah,
which is in and of itself, a kind of a cool thing, 'cause you just connect and bring people into your world. But at the end of your live, you have, everybody watching, like, kind of close their eyes, and you do like a little prayer. And you know, there was like, the other night you were like, you know, imagine yourself walking into the grocery store and you're like walking down the Oreo aisle and you're like creating this visual. And man, I'll tell you, like, I feel like I'm pretty damn good at keto, right? Like, I've done this for a while now. And I had like this moment as you were talking and doing this sort of like visualization, spiritual prayer. And I was like, oh my fucking God, like, this is so true. Like, I can picture it. I can feel the feeling, like the excitement of thinking about buying a package of Oreos and then thinking about the empowerment by walking by it and not taking it off the shelf. So it's like, it's both sides.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. And I don't know, like, before keto, was that a part of your, you know, your sort of being to be more spiritual? Or is that something that has been a part of you that you've sort of embraced as a part of this journey to health
more recently? So I think that growing up, I was never super spiritual. I was very impulsive, basically just your typical pleasure seeking, like, hedonistic, like, teenager. And I started keto at a pretty young age. I was like 19. So it was like, as I did have a near-death experience in a car accident when I was 17, which kind of opened my brain to the idea of, I can't just live life seeking pleasure. I have to do something more meaningful. I have to find a deeper meaning in life. And that's when I started to unlock a sense of ambition. And that ambition kind of translated to spirituality, because I like watched The Secret, which is about like the law of attraction and manifesting. So around that time, I did get into a little bit of spirituality, but it was still for, let's like manifest like a Lamborghini or something. And then over time, as I matured and got into like self-help, I realized these things probably won't bring me happiness. What really would bring me happiness is finding that long-term sense of joy rather than that short-term hit of, I just got a new car. I feel great for 15 minutes, but then the next day it's just like, well, what's the next one? So I was able to step into a life of delayed gratification. And I think that was directly aligned with my spiritual journey, because that is the backbone of all spirituality, whether it's like Buddhism or whatever we're talking about. It's all about stepping back, observing ourselves, realizing that these short-term pleasures are not going to bring us happiness. And it's just like, if there's one word that would describe how I got into spirituality, it's delayed gratification, because that is the hack to succeeding. It's like, when you're in that aisle looking at the box of Oreos, you have two options, instant gratification or delayed gratification. And it's such a spiritual thing, because it's deeper than just taking control in that moment. You have to have some sense of preparation. So rather than manifesting a new Tesla, I can manifest a version of myself who has more control. And I think that is like where it clicked for me, was, let's use these tools. Like, the law of attraction is very interesting. I watched The Secret and it literally changed my life. But it's like, let's use these tools to shape ourselves into better humans, better decision makers, rather than just like try to manifest something out of thin air, which never works anyway.
Right. And I get it, because you could eat that, you know, package of Oreos and feel amazing at that moment. The sense of defeat that you're going to feel after is real. I know a lot of people who I get to talk to, you know, through social media and stuff, write or reach out to me because they like they're beating themselves up because like, oh, I cheated last night. I had this X, Y, and Z, and now I feel like crap, and I don't know how I'm gonna restart. Where do I begin? And it's like this sense of defeat. They feel small. They feel weak. Or to your point, you can look at that box of Oreos and say like, no, I'm not gonna feel good now, but I'm gonna be so damn proud of myself tomorrow. I'm gonna feel empowered because I made the right decision, and I feel so good because I'm still in ketosis, or I'm proud of myself mentally or emotionally. So that's really cool. And I can see how like taking a second in those moments and writing down like your pros and cons, like pro, this is going to be fucking delicious. Con, I'm going to feel like ass tomorrow. You know, pro, whatever. So I could see that being like a powerful moment. I'll probably impart some of that because I still suffer from some binge eating habits, even with keto food, which, may kind of lead me to my next question, because I feel some of those same triggers can happen with keto treats, even like clean homemade keto desserts. I still have to be very careful with them because of the same emotional triggers that will happen, even if it's fake sugar. Mm-hmm. I know you're somebody who really loves sweets. I just know that as a friend, and also seeing your cut, you love sweets. You have to have sweets every night with dinner, and that works for you. It doesn't seem to have such a downward spiral effect like it will on me. And I'm kind of curious because there's a little, I don't want to say inconsistency in a bad way, but on one hand, you're saying go 60 days without a cheat, so that you are empowered and in control. And then I'm guessing the point of that being, once you can work on that addiction, then after that 60 days, you can start to reintroduce happy foods and like a little bit loosen the reins a little bit because you've worked on that relationship. So I guess I take back, it's not really an inconsistency. It's just an approach that like I basically need to always be in not cheat mode. I can't do that for 60 days and then be okay. I cheat generally twice a year, and it's not a cheat day, it's like a cheat week. Once on my birthday, and usually once in March on my fiance's birthday, because it's like once there's birthday cake in the house, it's on. And they happen to be like, we have half birthdays, so it's like almost exactly once every 6 months. It's exactly once every 6 months. And then I go wild till I literally feel sick basically for a few days, and I'm like, oh yeah, I hate this feeling, and I'm like right back to keto, and then I don't really think about it again. So how do you manage, sorry, I was rambling because I'm talking about my experience, but my question for you is, how do you kind of manage your control when it comes to keto sweets? How do you keep check on that? And do you feel like keto sweets, whether they're fake sugar and almond flour or whatever, can those still have the same emotional triggers as the real sugary treats?
I think it varies for everybody. Some people just have this psychological hurdle, not hurdle, they just have this ingrained response to sweet tasting foods where they just go all out and eat so many servings that they're not even in ketosis anymore because you just ate 40 carbs worth of keto desserts. So it's like, for me, I have a good balance between foods that I don't enjoy but force myself to eat, which I don't know if this is very healthy either. I definitely didn't start doing this until I was already pretty far into my keto journey, but I allow myself to fill up on just like meh foods. So like some people love avocados, I don't care for them, but I make myself eat an avocado every day. I know there's a ton of nutrients in them. I know potassium, something a lot of people need more of. So I eat an avocado every day. I eat a can of sardines, like with the bones, every day. I eat sauerkraut because, so these are like my three pillars of Avocados great for like fiber, minerals, nutrients.
You almost see them as supplements, like eating your supplements.
Yes, and it's just a caveat that avocados and sardines are very filling. So when you eat an avocado and a can of sardines and like a little mini ramekin of sauerkraut, you feel pretty full. So maybe you fill up with these boring foods. Maybe you do eggs. And then when it's time for dessert, you've already eaten a lot of food that day that's very nutrient dense. So I kind of have the ability to splurge rather than if I was eating my typical like keto chicken crust pizza for lunch and then a low carb tortilla, giant burrito for dinner. And then for my dessert, I'm just eating a ton of keto sweets. It's like, no, I'm eating my lunch as very just boring foods to me so that I can enjoy my dinner, enjoy my desserts without being overly hungry and feeling a physical urge to fill up on them. But that only covers the physical part of this equation. There's also the mental part that you're talking
Right.
about, where no matter how full you feel, if you have that trigger in your brain, once you start eating those keto cookies, it's like my food like that actually is ice cream. So if I'm ever feeling ridiculously full and I want dessert, but I just know I couldn't eat anything, if I just start thinking about ice cream, it's like I could eat 900 calories of ice cream right now. So luckily, my stomach responds poorly to too much erythritol, which is the main sweetener in the keto ice cream I like. So I can stop myself from eating 3 pints. But if it wasn't for that, like I think I would have the same issue with you as far as keeping ice cream in the house. But luckily, my stomach just goes insane after about 40 grams of erythritol. So I literally am just. I just can't overeat ice cream, which is my one food where I do have that emotional trigger.
Gotcha. So you avoid the emotional triggers.
Well, like I said, it's ice cream, so I don't have to avoid it because the keto ice cream has too much sweetener for me to even overdo. So it's like I could have 6 pints of ice cream in my freezer of keto ice cream, but I'm not going to overdo them because the pain of eating too many sugar alcohols just far outweighs the joy that I would get from eating 4 pints of ice cream.
Right, but that's your logical ability to weigh the pros and cons. That's you've
Oh,
gotten to
yeah.
an amazing point, in your journey where you can do that. But I worry that not everybody has that power, because that's that there are still ways, like there are things that hurt my belly that like if I'm craving them, I'm still gonna eat it. You know what I mean? Like
Oh.
I guess it's tricky, is what I'm saying. And I do agree with the first thing you said too about like everybody's really different and kind of understanding those triggers. But I do feel like for some people, just because it's keto and sugar-free, it can still kind of set off those alarm bells. And can be a little bit triggering. Like I know last year in 2020, I stayed keto the entire time. But I really let myself have more happy foods because it was such a hard year. And they were all keto. Like ice cream is definitely one for me. I love the keto ice cream from Aldi randomly. The mint chocolate chip and the cookie dough are both so good. And it was like you, like it start with a couple bites, but then it became, even though it's sugar free, I realized that I had ended up without really choosing this, I had ended up getting to the point where both me and my friends are eating every single night. It started as like, yeah, I can have ice cream here and there. And then it was every night. And then it was, oh, I found this like sugar-free caramel at HEB. So now I'm doing half of a pint with sugar-free caramel, which probably I think it had Splenda and it's sucralose, which isn't great. And then it became a whole pint. And it's like, for me, it spiraled. And so then I just had to stop. I just had to cut it out. And it was fine. Like I feel controlled enough that it wasn't a big deal. I just had to stop. And for all of January, I basically didn't make that many other dietary changes in my life other than I just stopped all sweets. And this was all sweets. I was kind of joking. I talked about this on Instagram because I made these like Nutella lava cake recipe that I posted to Instagram. And they're so ridiculously indulgent and delicious. Sugar-free, totally clean keto. But after I tested them and I would like nibble a little bite, and I hate to say this because I know I'm going to get dragged for the food waste part of this, which I hate food waste, but I had to take care of my mental health. And I, after I'd made three batches to get the recipe right, and I threw it all in the trash. All of it. I threw it away. And I'll tell you that the reason I talked about that was because it reminded me of your Oreo visualization, in that I weighed the pros and cons and I said to myself, I don't like wasting food. I never do as a chef. I even try to use the scraps. However, I am going to take control. I am going to be so proud of myself tomorrow because I'm making a hard decision today. And it was actually a really empowering moment for me, which is why I shared it, because it was super, super empowering. For me to be like, wow, like 2 weeks ago, I was eating a pint of ice cream a day. Now I don't need anything. And I didn't eat a single sweet, keto or not, the month of January. Is actually a little bit longer than that. It wasn't until very recently that I had a little treat. It was only during the Texas blackout. So it was about 6 weeks without a single keto treat at all. And it kind of reminds me of your 60-day restart. Like, it, I needed that. Actually, I've given you some of my desserts because I didn't want them in the house. So, you know, I'm not lying. You've gotten a big tub of my chocolate mousse because I couldn't take it. Like, I was like, I need this out of my house because it's like, imagine like living in the Oreo aisle, you know, it's like, I need it out. So I gave you that whole thing of mousse, and it wasn't until Valentine's Day I made it again because my fiance got mad that I gave you the mousse. not actually mad, but funny mad, you know. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
but I definitely don't have the willpower. And so willpower, I guess, is what I'm trying to identify here, and sort of the addiction behind it. It's not purely sugar for me. It's anything that triggers that sweet tooth.
I think the best way to think about willpower is to pretend it doesn't exist. And by that, I mean, create habits that are stronger than willpower, because in the moments when we are faced with our temptations, if you just look at humanity, we're not good at resisting them. So if you're self-aware enough to realize that willpower has rarely worked for you, I think finding a deeper why and using that deeper why to baby step into habits that build on top of more habits that allow you to have like this armor around your brain. So the whole journaling thing, the whole 60-day thing, this is all habit building. And whenever you make it a habit to make the right decision, willpower is basically not in the equation anymore, because I just think that as, like, my book title is literally Breaking Up with Carbs, the 60-day guide for starting and sustaining keto with zero willpower. And it's like, willpower is just not something we can rely on unless you're like a David Goggins or somebody who just has this crazy burning drive to like succeed. I've never been disciplined. I've never had willpower.
Right.
And it wasn't until I created tiny habits that I appear to be disciplined. I appear to have willpower. And maybe I did use a little bit of willpower to even get myself in a situation where I could build the tiny habits. But it's like, I would say focus on habit building more than discipline, because like discipline is just like, you go watch a motivational video on YouTube, you're fired up. But then when it's time for bed and that pint of ice cream's in front of you, it's very hard to rely on willpower. And I commend you for your throwing away that treat you had, because sometimes you get that burst of courage where you're like, let's just do it. And that 15 seconds, this is what I always said about the scale. So sorry to like go off on another tangent, but people weigh themselves every day, not realizing that your weight fluctuates based on like stored water up to like 5 pounds per day. So your weight could be 3 pounds higher on Tuesday and 5 pounds lower on Friday. But if you're weighing yourself every day, that Tuesday of seeing it up 3 pounds higher could trigger you to self-soothe, or not self-soothe, to soothe yourself with food, which actually prevents you from losing those 2 pounds you would have otherwise lost. So a lot of
Right.
people sabotage their weight loss by allowing their emotions to guide them into eating food. And that emotional response wouldn't happen without the scale. So what I always say is, if you literally just use 2 minutes of courage to take your scale, put it in the trash, tie it, throw it in your dumpster so you're not going to dig it out, it can literally add years to your life because that few minutes of courage and making such a drastic change and declaring yourself free from this, whether it's a dessert or the scale or whatever it is, from this toxic thing that controls you, can it's just the most liberating feeling in the world. And I think that just having that few minutes of courage is great, but it's not always going to be there. So capitalize on it when it's there. But for 90% of the time, I think it's about just creating those small habits.
I feel very strongly about what you just said. I think weighing yourself, if at all, if you could not do it, or at least like no more than once a month, at worst case scenario, once every 2 weeks, is so important because that data can really mess up your emotions. I agree with you completely. And like throwing out your scale is like throwing out your desserts in the cabinet, or like I did, you know. I couldn't agree more. I think a lot of it does come down to empowerment. But like sort of the practical ways that you're talking about, when you are having those lows or highs where you're like, I want to eat, and kind of catching yourself in those moments is really, really important. And it takes a long time to get there. And the other piece of this that I want to maybe mention is that it hasn't happened for either of us overnight. And I just want to kind of put that out as a reminder. I don't think I'd ever had that much power over a keto dessert. And that was like in my 3rd year of keto. So, you know, this is a relationship that is ongoing. Like my relationship with food is like, it's like a marriage or something, right? Like it's something that's always being worked on and ebbing and flowing. Like it's never done. I think that my relationship with food, and probably for anybody I'm speaking broadly about, but I'm just talking about myself personally, will be a part of my existence the rest of my life. And it's conflicting in a sense because here I am with food as my world. I professionally cook and write recipes. The idea of demonizing food is obviously off the table for me, no pun intended. I don't believe that food is the enemy. I really don't. I truly believe that food is not the enemy, and we should never look at it that way. In fact, what's special about keto in general is that you don't have to restrict yourself. You don't have to deny food to find success on keto. There are certain foods that you want to remove as much as possible, but you don't have to like deny food. You're not like counting points or like completely restricting yourself from deliciousness. Like you can always eat and always enjoy what you're eating the whole time on keto. So there's like this conflict between like, I want everybody to eat amazing keto food, and I'm trying to contribute as much as I can from my heart to make sure that people are eating delicious keto food because, the way that you share, like the work you share around a healthy way of finding balance in food and finding longevity, my fundamental belief is that if people are eating food they love the whole time, they have a much higher chance of staying keto as well. So in addition to like the mental work and all these other things, I firmly believe that if you're loving your food, you have a much higher chance of staying keto and building a lifestyle around it. And I think like a lot of people think diet food or healthy food is like something they have to like power through, that it's like gross and like all you have to eat is like grilled chicken and a salad for the rest of your life. And that is not true. Like, that is just so not true. Look at your account. Look at my account. We have two completely different approaches to food, but they're both the same in that it's about just like taste.
Mouth pleasure. Yes.
And in that way, like, there's no denying we are the same in that sense. Like, I just want to eat delicious food. I'm sure most of the food that you post is just based on the food that you love. And it's the same thing for me. It's just like half of my posts are like what I happen to be eating that day or what I was craving. And then I turned it into a post, which is food that I love. So I don't want to sit here and spend, you know, time making it sound like food is this bad thing that we have to, like, you know, stay away from, because it's not. However, being empowered to, like, be in control of food from the emotional piece, I firmly believe is, like, the key. And so in many ways, I think your protocols around that fall very much in line with my beliefs as well. Even though some of what you and I don't always fit into the molds that we all see of, like forget about the clean and dirty part or this and that. Like, a lot of the keto space requires, like, very strict tracking and ketone monitors and, you know, very specific rules around keto. And, like, my book is not really about that at all. I don't ever use the word diet in my book, I don't think. I have macros because I do think it's important for people who are tracking, and, like, I want my food to be accessible for anybody, whatever your journey is. But I really don't see my book as a diet book. And I don't really see your book as a diet book. I think it's a self-help book at its core, right?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, a diet book, I think, would lead people to make poor decisions. Would lead people to seek out these quick results, whereas a self-help book kind of breaks down your belief about your body. Like, there's so much in my book about loving yourself, because whenever you go on a diet, it's unlikely that you're going on this diet because you love yourself so much and you just want to feed it healthy things and you want to take away all of the metabolic damage you're doing.
Right.
It's like,
I wish that was the ideal, but it's...
Yeah. So most people start this approach with, they look in the mirror, they go, God, I hate this. And they take extreme measures to change it. And the way we approach this is, let's really take a step back. And I always say, like, imagine if you woke up tomorrow and you were paralyzed and you couldn't walk. It's like, how grateful are you to wake up today and have working legs? Like, think about all of the things you're grateful for when it comes to your body. There are people who live in chronic pain 24/7. It's like, it's a miracle that your body is working as well as it is. And whenever we just take a step back and feel grateful to have a functioning body, it's like, what are we going to do about it? And I think the best thing is to be like, okay, I know I don't like how my body looks. I'm not saying you have to look in the mirror and feel proud, because that's just never going to happen for me.
You can't force that.
Yeah. It's like, I would feel super proud if I looked in the mirror one day and had abs, but it's never going to happen because I like eating 2 keto cookies with my ice cream at night. So it's like, I'm never going to look in the mirror and feel totally proud, but I am going to look in the mirror and feel grateful and feel like, okay, I love that I have this body. And it's really hard to get people to do that. So rather than focusing on everything you hate about your body, I think the key is to focus on what you love about your body without lying to yourself. You know, it's easy for, I love body positivity. I think it's beautiful. And it is the unlock to people making realistic changes. But I think to tell ourselves, I'm proud of my body, isn't necessarily helping, because then you just get into self-delusion, which isn't really, it's not really helping. So it's like, let's tell ourselves we love our body and let's make healthy choices to feed our body nutrients, to get these metabolic damages undone, but let's also be mindful about being self-aware of like, yeah, this is not an ideal situation. So how can I change it? And you usually change it with love. You never change it with hate, because if you hate yourself, why would you want yourself to get healthy? It's like, if we find somebody we hate, like who's the most hated person? If we look at them, do you ever think, wow, I would love for them to get healthy, you know? And a lot of people look at themselves in the mirror, and to them, they are the person they hate the most. And that's just, it's devastating. So to get yourself in a place where you take away that self-hate and you start acting towards yourself with compassion, and you think about yourself as somebody you love, it's much easier to make those changes, because you can't do it with hate. It's just never going to work.
Man, preach. This is really, really like hitting me hard, because when I, you know, I remember being really heavy, and I didn't like what's in the mirror, but the truth is I still don't really like what's in the mirror. And so I think getting into keto or getting into a health purely to fix what's in the mirror is not the why. It can't be the why. There's something more behind it. And I love that, you know, we certainly don't want to be delusional, but rather than saying like a lie of like, I love what's in the mirror, when you don't, you can love yourself despite what's in the mirror. And you should, you know, because we as people have so much to give. We're worthy of kind of taking care of ourselves. I remember when I talked to one of my best friends, Carolina, and was talking about how, like, I'm not happy. I need to make a change. It was like 300 something pounds. And she said to me, Mike, I want to make sure I get this right. Taking care of your body is the single greatest gesture of self-love that one can make. And that was the aha moment for me, where I was like, I'm done hating myself. I'm going to love myself. I'm going to take time to love myself enough to start making these good decisions. And that was pretty much the day I started keto.
Wow.
That like started my whole journey, and I'm forever grateful for her saying that to me. I never thought about it that way. I never thought about eating right as a gesture of self-love. I never put that language behind it. And so like deciding that today I'm going to love myself, because here's the truth. The truth is that when you're big, you're overweight, and in fact, even if you're skinny, like there's a lot of people who look in the mirror and they're not happy with what they see, right?
Yeah.
Losing weight, or if you're too skinny and you look at a buff person, you want to be bigger or whatever your goal is. I promise you that if you hate the person in the mirror at 300 pounds, you're going to hate them at 200. You're going to hate them at 150. That's not really the problem. And that's what you're getting at as well. Like, we can choose to love the person that's inside, despite the number on the scale. And that's sort of the foundation of it all. That's the why for me. I didn't lose weight for anybody else. I didn't lose weight because my partner wouldn't, you know, wasn't attracted to me or wanted me to lose weight. My parents were getting nervous about my weight in regards to, like, you know, diabetes and getting sick and being unhealthy down the line, because I was too heavy. That wasn't enough to motivate me, I'll be honest. In fact, like, people kind of, the shame around being heavy wasn't enough for me to be motivated to make this change. For me, it was a moment of saying, you know what, for the first time in my life, I'm going to do this for me. That was my why, and continues to be my why today. And it kind of sparked a whole world for me. Like, my life changed from that moment on, my whole approach. Like, people in my life, you guys see me now, you know, like the Chef Michael. Unfortunately, nobody except my old friends and family really knew the shy, insecure, chubby kid that was before Chef Michael.
Wow.
and it was a really powerful moment in my life. So I really appreciate your words today, because they are hitting home with me, my friend. They really are.
Yeah, I think that's so beautiful. It really is. It's like, you're not going to be happy when you lose the weight, but maybe you'll lose the weight if you're happy. And I just think that whole mindset of doing it out of love, doing it because you really care, is the unlock. And if it's just like, what happens when you get sick? The only thing you want is to feel normal again. And it's like just using that polarization of like, what does it feel like when my body is in pain? And taking that as like, instead of thinking about what I see in the mirror and running from that, because you're right, we all have a little bit of body dysmorphia. I'm sure The Rock looks in the mirror and thinks, man, my biceps could be bigger, you know?
Right.
So it's like, we all have a little bit of that, and we're never going to be totally satisfied when we look in the mirror. But if we can use the feelings, the physical sensations, because when you have a body, your brain is literally how you feel is being, I think a lot of people say health starts inside the mind. I think the mind starts with health, because your brain is being told how to feel based off of what's going on in your body. If somebody has not eaten in weeks, the only thing they can think about is food. So it's like, if we look at our body as a vehicle to reach happiness, like you were saying, of like, let me do this for me rather than so I can look a certain way. It's like treating your body as something to care for, as something to really love, is the ultimate key. And I just couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah. Amazing. And I'm really glad that you take an approach to keto and an approach to dieting, quote unquote, that isn't as traditionally focused around like the data behind nutrition and like making every decision perfect. I want to just kind of tell you that I appreciate that, as somebody who fundamentally believes that behind all of it, you have to just love yourself. You have to love the food you're eating. And you have to take an approach that's really sustainable. So sure, like there's going to be people who like get mad that like you do dirty keto, or they get mad because like I have butternut squash in my cookbook, you know, whatever it may be. Yeah. But I think what we both do in our own ways is show people that there's a way to do this, and it's like through a healthy and happy approach, through mental health, through kind of overall wellness, way before macros.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
1,000%. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing to really connect with people like you, because we go into this keto world and we're like, everyone's so strict, it's kind of intimidating and scary. I feel like I don't belong sometimes. But whenever we started hanging out, I was like, okay, this is my type of person. Like, this is the world I want to exist in. And I couldn't be more grateful.
Yeah, the first time we met in person, we barely knew each other. You moved to Austin, and I don't remember who reached out to who, but like I also just moved here. We didn't really know. I didn't have any friends or whatever. We met for coffee and like 2.5 hours later or something, to basically a stranger. We sat down and just talked, talked like this for like 2.5 hours the first time we met, which I think was really cool. Like, there's just not that many people that happens to me in my life. So I appreciate you, my friend. I'm glad we're local so that we can do this. We do actually do this all the time, like almost once a week. But I'm really glad we could kind of take a moment and kind of record one of these conversations. I really appreciate you. I appreciate what you do. Obviously, beyond just the health and nutrition, I think you're amazing at just building community and making people feel welcome and not really judged, which is also what I try to do as well. I just think you're a nice human being. So thanks a lot. Guys, please make sure that you find Eirik on socials. His social media is awesome, both Instagram and TikTok at Keto Snacks with a Z at the end. And then your book is called Breaking Up with Carbs on Amazon, and it's fantastic. So please get a copy of that. And you guys have to follow him on Instagram. You probably already are. He's a social media rock star. But if you're not, please follow at Keto Snacks with a Z at the end immediately, or you will be missing out. He does daily lives, I think, what, 8 p.m. East Coast time?
8:30 Eastern.
8:30 Eastern. Yep. You kind of like vibe with him on a more personal level, other than just like his food and cool videos. And like I said, get his cookbook. Also, after this, I will be doing a bonus episode where I'll be talking to you. I'll kick him out of the room, and then I'll be talking to you individually as a bonus episode, kind of reflecting on what we talked about. So join me on Patreon, patreon.com/chefmichael for a little bonus episode. And like I always say, shameless plug, get yourself a copy of New Keto Cooking if you're interested in a new approach to keto that is not, it's really not a diet book, though it's food that will work for your diet, I promise. It's fully, fully crafted to fit keto macros, and it's super clean. Clean eating, meat and veggies and all kinds of good healthy stuff from scratch, but it won't taste like diet food. It's just really yummy, chef-inspired, easy recipes that you can make at home. So grab yourself a copy of New Keto Cooking. Thank you so much to our sponsor, Redmond Salt, for supporting the podcast. I use Redmond Salt in all my cooking. It's fantastic and packed with trace minerals, which is such an important part of the keto diet, getting in those electrolytes. Friendly reminder to drink some water, guys. Stay hydrated. Give yourself a smile today. Wherever you are in your keto journey, be proud of yourself. You really can do this. You are worthy. As we just talked about today, love yourself enough to be healthier tomorrow than you were today. I will talk to you guys very soon. Thank you so much, Eirik, for being here.
I love it, man. I love you. Thank you, bro.
Appreciate it. Love you too. Bye.